is The Nine with Ryan Pinder on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Welcome to the Eric Francis Show. It is Monday morning, 9 o'clock. It's brought to you by the 7,000 men and women who work in the Alberta horse racing and breeding industry. Mr. Francis, how are you?
I'm better than the Flames.
Aren't we all?
That
yes.
You can't go anywhere in this city, and I know it's not a normal world, so interactions are limited largely to dog parks and and stuff like that. But even this morning at the dog park, that's all the talk. I mean, it's everyone wants to know what is wrong, what is the problem. And I don't know if you have the answer, but I know I don't.
Well, I think there's lots of things wrong. You can question the roster. You can question the coach. You can question the core players. You can question the organization's willingness to chase a premier coach. I mean, really, there's all kinds of fingers to point, isn't there?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's there are so many different, you know, aspects to this. But and, yeah, the coach is taking probably the most heat. I think that's fair to say. He's probably taking more heat than anyone else on this one. But it's I don't know. I thought they played one of their better games on Saturday. That's the bottom line to me, which
isn't
to
that
me
weird?
Is the scariest. That's the scariest thing about all this, that I thought they were engaged. I know they were emotional. Kachuk leading the way. You know, Monahan out of the lineup hurts. I know he has his detractors in town, but it still hurts when you're losing a top two centers. But they did all the things. They did many of the things that they have been missing. But there were these, you know, at some point in sports, I kept asking all the players and the coach this after the game, at some point, don't you just have to tip your hat to the opponent? Like, you just played one of the greatest hockey players of all time, and he had one of his better games of his career. And sometimes you just can't stop that, and sometimes you just fall victim to that. So I'm not saying it's all because McDavid was that good, but it is scary that they played well, and yet they lost 7-1.
It's not even about Saturday. That's what I think is more to the point, that is going to happen.
Yeah.
You're going to have nights where you get shellacked and you actually weren't that bad, and the other team gets a lot of bounces and you don't get any, or you run into the best player in the world and he's sensational. It's really about the body of work through 17 games in this league this year.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
18 games. What's the identity of this Calgary Flames group, Eric? There's 18 down, 38 to go.
Well, that was the question we asked them. You know, I thought that was fascinating the other day when we asked Milan Lucic and several of the players, what is your identity? Because I don't think the average fan could tell you what their identity is. The fact is, they don't have an identity. But, you know, it was interesting to hear what the players think their identity is or should be.
What do they say?
They a hard-checking team that can score. And
nope.
You know, I know, right? Exactly. And I said, really? Like, that's what you're pegging this at? Like, I don't see you as a hard-checking team. I still see you as a deep team. I still do, despite what's being shown on the ice. I still think they're a deep team, but they were 21st in scoring when they said this on Wednesday. So now they'd be even lower in the standings.
Yeah.
So they're not a scoring team, and they're certainly not a hard-checking team. So they're a delusional team. Maybe that's their team that thinks there's something that they're not even close to. That's terrifying.
If you had to assign responsibility for why things have gone wrong, and I'll give you some different areas, and it's always a blend. It's never 100% and zero here and mm-hmm. zero here and zero there. It's always probably closer to how you'd slice a pie up. But if you had to look at the GM's chair, the coach's chair, the core of this hockey club, or other, how would you assign responsibility for a start that's only one game under 500, but has been incredibly underwhelming and disappointing nonetheless?
Yeah, and just before I answer that, I'll say, if they go and win four straight against Ottawa, now again, we can play that game all we want, but they're right back in it. They'd be ahead of Montreal. But, you know, that remains to be seen. I think that's going to be the more telling series. If you can't get all 8 points, or God help you, at least six or seven from the Ottawa Senators, then your season is over.
It's five of six. It's not just four in a row. It's four in a row, one against somebody else, and then another game. It's five of six games are going to be against the Sens, and there'll be a lot of calculators out of how many points they got in those five games, because It doesn't look like there's another team in this division. Well, there's not a lot of runway against Vancouver, but that there's a chance where you can say, without question, we're a better team. We should be getting 2 points. So, yeah, like the 5-6 after this two in Toronto will be against the Sens. That feels like the we're back or, okay, it's time for a drastic change.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. I mean, I don't think anyone should or does think that they're going to have any success in Toronto for a million reasons.
But, well, I mean, look, you know, hey, Ottawa's beat them twice. Toronto is a team in the league, all teams in the league. I mean, look, favorites win 2/3 of the time, max. Heavy favorites, mm-hmm. like around there. Like, crazy things happen. But to your point, it's a tough set before the 5-6. You got to get there first.
Yeah, and you ask any player in that room, they'll tell you that they're probably their best effort of the year, or one of their top three efforts of the year, was one of their losses against the Leafs. That game in which they got some pretty horrific bounces. But they thought they outplayed the Leafs, and they thought they played the game that they want to play. I think their confidence level against the Leafs, it's not like it's going to stag. I think they feel like they can skate with the Leafs. And what a brilliant time for them to gain some confidence. But, boy, is that hard to dig that up, dig up that. They're sagging right now. I mean, these guys are on their heels in every way, on and off the ice. So to answer your question, the core of this team is to blame for this. The GM is last on the list. I don't want to say last. I mean, he put the whole team together. But you said it earlier. They're just one game under 500. It's not that bad. But the expectations here are so high because this GM has done a very good job piecing this team together, in my opinion. Now, I don't know if you could, when you talk about blaming the core, several stars on this team have had pretty good seasons to start the year. Like Elias Lindholm has quietly gone about being a point-of-game player. Johnny Gaudreau has not quietly gone about playing. Like he's been a point-of-game player. He's been doing that and getting a lot of attention for it, which is great. Monahan. And anyway, yes, the core is first to blame. I guess coaching would probably be second, and then GM would be third. There's so many other things that you need to put on that list to rank them. But, yeah, if you're going to talk in sweeping generalities. But, I don't know. I mean, you certainly can't blame goaltending. I think it's easy to just say core. Like, what about, you've got a third pairing that's been quite an adventure, right, on your defense. And you knew that you were going to have some growing pains with two youngsters. Strauss not a youngster, but you knew that there were going to be some growing pains getting back into the league. Anyway, it's on the players. I always think it's a cop-out to just blame it on the coach. I mean, yeah, he plays a role in this for sure, but these players are the ones. And what is everybody questioning? They're questioning things that no man wants to be questioned on, and no man should be questioned on, like heart, work ethic. That's scary. That, to me, is symptomatic of big, big problems in this organization that we've known about, worried about for years. So if it was a skill issue, that's on the GM. But it's not a skill issue. This team has the skill. Can we all agree on that? Like, on paper, this team still should be vying for this division crown. But on the ice, it's not happening.
I don't know about division crown. I think Toronto's better than everyone else in this division. That was my feel before the start of the year. But I think they should be in that second tier. I think they should be fighting second in this division. I like this team on paper a lot more than I've seen on the ice. And for that reason, I keep looking to the coach and thinking, why are certain players being put in certain spots that don't make sense? Like, why is Byron Fraze on the ice when you're down a goal in the late going? He's probably the organization's 14th, 15th, 16th best forward. Mm-hmm. Why is Nordstrom on 4-on-4? Why is your fourth line on the ice with an empty net behind them trying to tie? Why did you put the rookie defenseman who's had his fair share of bumps and bruises to run the first power play? Why did it only last 4 periods if it was an idea? Like, it looks like a rookie coach there, Eric. It really does.
Why did you have Josh Levo as your third shooter in his shouts? And why did you continue to put Josh Levo in top six roles? I continue to try and put Dominic Simone in top six roles. I mean, there's plenty of questionable moves that have been made, I think early on, Dakota would be the first to say, hey, we don't have the benefit of exhibition games to try and figure out where everybody fits. And I think he's trying very hard to make sure that to try and get a Levo or a Simone to fit in, but they're not. They've been atrocious. I understand fans' frustration. I say that that's the thing I hear the most about from players or from people watching this team. Fire the coach, fire the coach, fire the coach. You know, how many coaches have they gone? Was it four in the last 6 years?
Yep. Yeah, Hartley, Gullitson, Peters, Ward.
The owners are going to lose $60, $70 million this year. I doubt there's a penchant to lose another $1 million or plus. Because if you're going to go and address the coaching situation, theoretically, you have to go out and spend big money on a guy, finally, if you're going to do that. So that's $3, $4 million a year, whatever the price tag is for a big-name coach. Or maybe not. Maybe there are some guys on the sidelines. There are guys on the sidelines that have been proven in this league that are desperate right now, and they would probably take a lot less to get an opportunity. Either way, asking the owners to dip into pockets to the tune of at least another $2 or $3 million a year and pay two coaches at the same time again.
Maybe three.
Depending
on how things went with Bill Peters, yeah.
Yeah, yes, yeah. We don't know how that all got settled.
Right.
If the GM went to the owner and said, and I say owner because Murray calls most of the shots here, so the GM went to him and said, look, I'm really convinced that this is what we need to do to get out of this. It would have to be the last straw for this GM, right? I mean, and I think he's a phenomenal GM. I really do. I don't lay any blame on the GM. I shouldn't say I don't lay any blame. There's enough blame for everybody to go around. Don't get me wrong. But because I think he needed to shake it up in the offseason, everybody knows how I feel they had to do that. They didn't do it. They're going to have to do it this offseason with the obvious suspects. But at this point in time, 16, 17 games in, you're really going to fire the coach? I don't know. I can't see it happening. I really can't see it happening. I can see them riding out this season with this coach for better or worse.
We'll take a break. Your phone's a little crappy. We'll sort that out. We'll come back with more thoughts on the Calgary Flames. Send us your comments, 960-960. It is the fan feedback line for SML Entertainment. Making family time more exciting with pool tables, pinball, ping pong, beachcomber, and Caldera hot tubs and more. Visit smlentertainment.com. Where's the lion's share of responsibility for an underwhelming start? You tell us. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
The Eric Francis Show is brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. The Alberta horse racing and breeding industry has an $83 million economic impact in Calgary annually and positively affects almost every Alberta community. Visit thehorses.com.
Reminder, all of our broadcasts do come to you live from the Iconic Studio, powered by Iconic Electric and Controls in downtown Calgary. Proudly owned and operated in Western Canada since 2008. Instrumentation, it's Iconic. Visit iconicec.ca to find out more. The Eric Francis Show rolls on for our good friends at Horse Racing Alberta. Mr. Francis, sifting through the ashes of an ugly weekend. It was last week, after a listless 5-1 loss to the Canucks that saw the Flames get four of a possible 8 points against the lowly Vancouver side, that the character and the work ethic of this team was called into question. They followed that up with two losses in two nights against the provincial rival. Safe to say, the temperature is hot out there.
It is hot, and I'm very interested in I feel like I've heard it all from people that you'd meet in the dog park and friends and but I'd be interested to hear what the fan feedback line is, what generally people are saying throughout the morning show and now. What are people saying these days?
It's a lot, and there's a lot of targets there. I'll read a few for you. I'm old school, guys. I think the players shouldn't have to be told to get going in the first. I think the coach has said that before each game. Maybe the captain or the team leaders need to give this group a boost. Have they talked about changing the chemistry? They have talked about changing the chemistry on this team for years, and yet who's been moved? That comes in from Brian.
I just want to jump in there. I don't think the Flames have talked about changing that up. I think we in the media and fans have, but I've never heard that from the Flames talking about changing up the character or leadership, right? They feel like it's solid in there, but I think, we've seen so many signs over the years that it's not. But anyway, just throwing that out there.
Well, let's stay there. Because I think in my opinion, they actively looked to move a piece of their core all offseason and couldn't get a deal done, even stretching back to last trade deadline. That's the intel I have. I think the team said everything, the players said everything nice about each other after a loss to Dallas in a series where, you know, they play a little bit better. They should have won that thing. They talked about how tight the room was. It doesn't look like a tight room now, despite what they said. But I don't believe management didn't try to change this core up this offseason. Do you?
I believe that they definitely looked at different options. But, you know, the pie in the sky thinking that people have, like, as to the value of certain players on this team, it's just not there. And you're not going to force it if you're a general manager. I mean, I think now, you know, let's see how this season plays out. But assuming it continues to play out this way, obviously he's going to be forced to deal from a position, you know, not exactly a position of strength. And he's going to have to get rid. This has been my argument forever as to why Johnny Gaudreau has to be moved. His value is not high out there. But now you've got 1 year left on his contract this summer. And everyone knows you've got to move him. So his value is going to be even lower. So anyway, I'm not going to get back to that, people. I don't hate Johnny Gaudreau.
It is an absolutely accurate talking point in the sense that here are the facts. He's got 1 year left on his deal. And at the beginning of the 21-22 season, which is next year, he has a five-team trade list kick in. Not a five-team no trade, a five-team trade list. This is absolutely the offseason, or the season in season, where they have to make a decision. Do you trade him? Do you extend him? I do not see them bringing him back as a pending UFA. So I think it's a fair point that you make. But I also think you undervalue the player a bit because I don't think teams are bringing Johnny in to be the lead dog. If he's going to come in and play as your second or third or fourth best forward, he's probably going to be great for you. So I do think there's value there, especially when you look at how he's played. Monahan has not played well this year. He doesn't have a right winger. He's done really well this year.
Johnny's been phenomenal this year. People mistake my, you know, constant reminders that I think they need to trade Johnny Gaudreau as me not liking the guy, which is not true, or me not thinking he's a good hockey player. I think he's a phenomenal hockey player. My knock on him is always that when the game gets dirty and filthy in the playoffs, that he can't be a significant contributor. Now, there is a theory out there, and I've spoken to Flames management about this, you know, where they're like, yeah, no, that's part of why they've moved Lindholm to the top line. They want to go into the playoffs with Johnny not having to have the whole weight of the world on his shoulders. They want him to be in a, you know, a secondary role. Because, if he was on the Tampa Bay Lightning, Johnny Gaudreau would be a phenomenal. He's Tyler Johnson. He's Andre Palat. But my point is, you could be a little guy who's not going to be that effective in the playoffs, but play a big role in a secondary fashion. So my point is also, and I think you made it for me, is that, yeah, teams want to bring him in a secondary role. Well, you're not going to play first line prices for a guy who, A, is going to come in and be a secondary player, but B, a player who's 1 year away from UFA status and will then sign with anybody he wants. So a lot of teams are like, well, why would we give up assets for Johnny Gaudreau when we just wait one more year and we can have him on the open market? Especially if you're Philadelphia or New Jersey or one of these teams that he's long been rumored to want to go to. They're like, well, yeah, well, why would we pay for him now? We could sign him. We got to overpay a little bit on the unrestricted free agency market, but you know, he's a Jersey guy. Let's sign him and get him then. Anyway, whenever people talk about shaking up this core, let's cut the crap. They're talking about moving Johnny Gaudreau. Like, who else in the core are you going to trade? Let's go through the list. Mark Giordano?
Not going to get any.
Sure. Exactly. I'm not saying you can't get rid of him.
Go through the list, and I'll just have a quick comment on each. So, yeah, I agree.
Exactly.
Gio's not going to bring you back.
Elias Lindholm?
Keep him.
He's your best player. He's your best hockey player. Matthew Tkachuk?
Keep him. At all
heart
costs.
And soul of this organization and a future captain.
Yeah.
You know, who else is in the court? I'm not going to include Noah Hanifin. I mean, some people do. He's been really good this year. But you're not trading him. He's just starting to realize his potential. Chris Tanev, I don't know. He's part of your leadership group, and he's new. And so you don't lump him into your core, although he is now moving forward. You can't move him. He's a heart and soul guy, too. who else is there? Then there's Sean Monahan. Okay, so you're talking about Gaudreau and Monahan. Your thoughts on Monahan? Obviously, you would think that you'd like to trade him too.
Well, I don't know how much value there is for Sean Monahan on the market when I think they tried to shop him for the last year and they really didn't get any good offers, or they would have done it. And is he playing well? Is he a guy that, despite being, what, like 30 pounds heavier and 5 inches taller than Johnny, shows up in tough spots? Is he physical? And for all the work he's done on his two-way game, do you still have to give him high ground? And where's the goals? If he doesn't do that, what's he good at? I don't think Sean Monahan has much trade value at all. You could trade him. You're not going to get much.
Yeah, I mean, there were some teams kicking tires last summer. I know that. But again, you know, it's
well,
one
you
thing
call
to
it kicking
tires,
but I mean, would it be fair to say the Flames are shopping him, or is that overstating it?
No, I wouldn't say they were. I don't know, really have a 100% answer for that. I know that the Flames are always listening. Obviously, every team is listening. I think they would be more than willing to trade Sean Monahan if the right deal or the right fit came along. But I don't know if they were out there calling, beating down the bushes, going, we got to get rid of this Sean Monahan. Because it's a package deal, right? I mean, we all see that. Johnny Gaudreau without Sean Monahan, we haven't seen it much, but there's a reason why they keep putting them back together, because they do mesh well. You got to give them credit for that. I also think Monahan's not – I think Monahan – I don't think he's been as bad as everybody's saying this year. Some of Johnny's best goals this year have been on incredible setups from Sean Monahan. So I don't think he's a one-trick pony who can just fire it in from the hash marks. I think he's got some playmaking in him as well. But that's another debate for another day. So anyway, again, going back to the core, we're talking about Johnny. So again, you know, that's the big question. Is he going to trade Johnny this summer or not? Don't say, is he going to shake up the core this summer? The question is he going to trade Johnny Gaudreau this summer? My answer has always been, you have to. He's not re-signing here.
Well, but that's an assumption, though, is it not, Eric? If you offered him $9 million a year for 6 years, he wouldn't sign that?
You really want to pay him $9 million? I know you're just being hypothetical.
Well, you just say he's not going to resign, like it's a fact. But we have to understand that's your opinion, unless you've been told that. And he spoke publicly about his willingness to stay in Calgary at the end of last season. He spoke about how much he likes this market. He talked about how he and his fiance want to live here. I mean, you're either calling him a liar, or you know something you're not telling us. Is it a fact he's not going to resign here?
No. But I think I've heard enough and seen enough and to believe strongly that he's not resigning here. Plus, all you know, you're a UFA. You can go anywhere you want in the NHL, and you're going to sign in Calgary, where I mean, who knows where this team's at in 2 years in terms of. Are they a contender? Are they rebuilding? Are they tinkering? You know, are you happy here? I think he was paying lip service when he said that last year, because when he said that, it was right when people like me were saying, you've got to trade Johnny Gaudreau, because he just come off yet another horrific playoff. And I think that he didn't have a whole lot to say. And I think to try and defuse it, he was saying, look, I want to be here long term. That's why I think he said that. Anyway, I don't want this to be all critical about Johnny Gaudreau, but he's a central figure on this team, and he'll be the central focal point in terms of, if you want to affect significant change on this roster, you do it through Johnny Gaudreau. That's my opinion. Do you really think that you can affect significant change by trading somebody else? And keep in mind, you're not trading Tkachuk. You're not trading Lindholm. You're not trading, you know, guys like that.
Yeah, here's my thought on it. This is the offseason you make a decision on him. I'm not here to tell you that what's going to happen in terms of which way it's going to go, but there's clearly three options for me, and only two are palatable. You have the opportunity to extend him this summer. His no trade of 27 teams kicks in this summer. Only five teams you can move him to, or you let him walk to free agency. They're not going to let him walk to free agency. That's horrible asset management. So the two options are you extend him, or you trade him this offseason. I'll agree with you that, but I like the notion that you'd, in 2 years, you're talking to him while he's on the free market. Like, no, it doesn't get to that point. You think the GM's going to walk him to UFA? Of course not. So
no.
The decision's made this offseason with 1 year left, right?
That's exactly. And do you think he's going to sign, like, you know, with all the uncertainty, too, with the salary cap and this league and revenues? I mean, we don't even know if fans are going to be in the building in the fall. I mean, there's so many question marks. Do you think a GM is going to be able to step up and re-sign an asset like Johnny Gaudreau a year out from UFA status and say, yeah, Johnny, we'll commit $9 million a year or $8 million a year times 6-7 years. Not a chance. Not a chance an owner would have the power that would be palatable for him. So the answer is pretty obvious to me. And also, you need a concrete yes from Johnny Gaudreau that, yes, I definitely want to re-sign here. Let's make these numbers work.
Yeah.
And you're running out of time on that. You're running out of time on that because all of a sudden you don't. And I don't think that the no trade list is a big impediment. I think it's certainly part of the equation and part of why I keep saying they've got to trade him before then. But in today's world, look, you're going to trade a guy and he's okay. Okay. You know, Johnny, we've got a trade signed up. You got to go 1 year to wherever. Like, you get out of this situation, you start anew, you can build your brand somewhere else. I think most players are willing to, you know, amend that. Do you not think that?
I think if you're going to get good value back for Johnny Gaudreau, you're trading to him a place that he wants to be and where they think they can extend him. So I think the no trade list of 27 teams, the five teams he will accept a trade to, I think that's your shopping list of can you get enough value? Is there two teams in there bidding against each other? I don't know that 1 year to Nashville is going to do it because if it's just a rental, you're not getting much back. You know, JT Miller was playing bottom 6 minutes in Tampa Bay, had a little term left. They get a first plus for him. That's a nice bit of work, and he comes in and plays well. But the difference is, like, I can tell you Johnny Gaudreau could be more valuable than JT Miller could be, but there's only 1 year left. So I think if you move him, it's got to be a place where they think they can re-sign him, like Philadelphia, the city that he grew up in, or New Jersey, which is the state he grew up in, or Boston, where he played his college hockey, or New York, where he's on Broadway as an American, where the bright lights are. I mean, I would think those are four of the five teams on the trade list.
Absolutely.
So I hope you get two people that could get in the bidding war, because if it's only one team interested, it's going to turn into the Jerome Iginla thing, where you just take what you can get. You're not going to be able to dictate at all what you get back.
And that, to me, is the biggest reason why I've been beating this drum. This organization, this GM, cannot allow another Jerome Iginla situation. It's one of the low points in the history of this franchise. That GM is no longer in the NHL, and there's part of it is because he completely botched that whole situation. And don't get me wrong, the owners had a lot to do with that too, because the owners didn't want to ever get rid of Jerome Iginla. So he was in an impossible situation. But you don't want to be known as the guy who traded away one of the great players of our era. And I'm not including Johnny Gaudreau in that list. I'm talking about Jerome. But Johnny Gaudreau is one of the premier players in today's NHL, and you can't be known as the guy who gave him away for nothing. And so with every passing day, you're backing yourself into more and more of a corner in that regard. So I'm pretty sure, this GM is well aware that the clock is ticking on what he's going to do with Johnny Gaudreau. Yeah. And it's the number one issue facing this franchise moving forward, no question about it.
It's 9:38. We'll step aside and come back. The Leafs tonight, some interesting news. Three significant players out for the Leafs. Is that right? Potentially. We'll tell you who when we come back. Eric Francis Show continues. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
The Eric Francis Show is brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. The Alberta horse racing and breeding industry has an $83 million economic impact in Calgary annually and positively affects almost every Alberta community. Visit thehorses.com. Game in a Minute, brought to you by Hyatt Infinity. Get three payments on the house when you lease or finance a 2020 or 2021 model. Hyatt Infinity, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
McDavid steps into the far circle, shoots, and they score! The Steelers pick it up in center. Nugent Hopkins scores! Lindholm, down low to Kachuk, jamming away! Mascheponi scores! Far circle to Nugent Hopkins, who backs it up to Barry, shoots, and they score! Now McDavid steals it from Hanifin. McDavid steps in, shoots, and scores! Now Russell will backhand it behind the net. Here's McDavid again, dancing in front, shoots, and scores! Darnold is able to hold it in. Here's Ryan Nugent Hopkins, he shoots and scores! Slides it to Archibald, who steps in, shoots, and scores! They get five unanswered for the Oilers, who now have a 7-1 lead.
Game in a Minute, brought to you by Hyatt Infinity. Save up to $9,000 with a cash purchase of a Q50 or Q60. Hyatt Infinity, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
Flames back at it tonight, looking to snap a three-game skid. Welcome back to the Eric Francis Show for sports race, horse racing Alberta. Excuse me, not sports racing. That's not a thing. My name is Ryan Pinter. A reminder to check out the latest for the Flames roundup highlights for ATB's Brightside. It's hosted twice a week by Pat Steinberg. Find it on your social streams, Twitter, Facebook, or at sportsnet.ca/960. It's all brought to you by Brightside by ATB, a new banking app to help you spend and save for what you love. Is this the right time to be facing the Leafs? And is that crazy to say when Austin Matthews is coming off a game that put him over the goal per game threshold, Eric? They're going to be missing some bodies tonight.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see who they play on that top line. Zach Hyman is out. Joe Thornton is out. And those guys have kind of taken turns being on that top line with Marner and Matthews. And of course, the bigger one, well, I don't want to say the bigger one, but an interesting player that's out, he's got a facial fracture that could take some time to heal, is Jake Muzzin. So there goes that storyline, that the puck flip, there'll be some sort of resurrection of that whole storyline. Yeah. Which is actually kind of interesting, because on Saturday night and on Friday night, I think Matthew Tkachuk sure could have used having Zach Cassian on the other side of the ice to keep spurring him on and motivating him and stirring things up. Without Cassian on the ice, Tkachuk was pretty quiet. I thought he was great on Saturday, by the way, but Friday was, non-existent. Maybe Jake Muzzin's the kind of guy who could have helped Tkachuk again tonight. Anyway, I think we're stretching it a bit with that storyline, but it's a moot point now because Muzzin's out. And I just want to, I know you want to talk about the Leafs, but I just want to go back to something. This notion that in the players-only meeting following the puck flip, that somebody in the room, and again, I haven't been able to nail down exactly what or if anything was said, but there's so much smoke on this that allegedly someone in the room said something to Tkachuk to the effect that, pick your spots a little better, or basically tone it down a little. Mm-hmm. If I'm the GM, I find out if that was said. And if that was said, I need to find out who said it.
Totally.
And whoever said it needs to be traded immediately. If you have a player in your dressing room who is telling the heart and soul of your team, you're de facto captain, Matthew Tkachuk. You had someone who just said to him, chill out a little. I'm sorry, but that says everything that's wrong with this organization. That's the work ethic, the heart, all the things that we're talking about, the character. I'm questioning it all if someone actually said that to Matthew Tkachuk in a meeting. Do you think I'm wrong?
I think you're dead accurate. I think the GM and the coach, that would have been a really frustrating thing to hear if that was said. Now, we're dealing in a lot of hypotheticals here, so I don't want anyone to take this as gospel. But Eric, to your point, there's so much smoke, we can't not acknowledge it. Like, Elliot Friedman acknowledged it. Johnny Gaudreau made a small reference to it on Spinning Chicklets. Like, this is not something that is completely fabricated. Something to that effect was said. Now, it's quite the tight wire to walk, because here's what we know, and you've alluded to it. He's the emotional leader of this hockey club. He's the guy that physically and emotionally invests in the game more than anyone else, and he drags other players into battle. We've heard the general manager and multiple head coaches describe it that way, dragging other players into battle.
Yep.
When he's going, this is a very difficult team to beat. But I also understand the sentiment of, on that specific incident, that night against Toronto, like, Matthew, you fell on the other team's goalie when he was hurt the night before and sold it. And you're good at that. And you're great at that. You're the best at that. You and Marchand, you've got this dark art completely mastered. But when you lose two games, they don't take the bait on the falling goalie, and someone flips a puck at no time left, and we're skating to the bench, and the most important thing is two nights away in Montreal, not settling a score for a team we don't play for a month. Maybe that energy is best served towards the Montreal game, where they came out flat and called a players-only meeting. I get that, but boy, is that a tightrope of a message to walk to the guy who I think would be last on everyone's list of players that need to go.
Yeah. I mean, let's go back to the puck flip itself. Like, I've asked everybody, because, Toronto fans went nuts when I called it a classless move. I think it was classless, but I'm not calling Jake Muzzin classless. It was a classless move. And I'll just say this. anybody who's ever played beer league, if you had a puck flipped at you at the buzzer of an emotional loss, now granted, a beer league game, who cares? But I do believe even in a beer league game, if someone flipped a puck at you and it was near your face because you're on your knees and it was just at the end of a game, I'd question your heart if you didn't go after the guy. Like, I think it's so disrespectful what was happening. Now, granted, I don't even blame the Leafs or Muzzin. There isn't a player in the league who wouldn't want to flip a puck at Matthew Tkachuk, given all the antics he's been authored over the years. Don't get me wrong. All I'm saying is, if any of the players had a problem with Matthew Tkachuk losing his mind on Muzzin, hey, granted, we all thought he went a little overboard and he was slamming his own bench and, you know, but we all thought that maybe that spoke to the fact that he was the only one who gave a crap in that room. And that's what this all comes down to, in my opinion. You know, a situation where Tkachuk cares more than anybody else. I really believe that. And he shows it. And you need more guys in that room who would show that. So if someone had a problem because they had to turn around on the ice and go, what is Tkachuk doing now? Well, when they saw the replay, they understood why Tkachuk went nuts. But at first, I understand them going, oh, my God, what are you doing now, Tkachuk? Okay, we'll wait in, and I'll hold the smallest guy while you go nuts. Like, it didn't bother it didn't affect anybody who was on the ice. Was it Mangiapane and Lindholm? I mean, they're not going to do anything about anything anyway. Anyway, just it kind of angers me. It angers me that someone would tell someone on any team to tone down. When really all they're doing is showing emotion and a hatred for losing. We asked Chucky after Tkachuk. Sorry, I don't want to call him Chucky. We asked him after the game, are there enough guys in that room who hate to lose? And he wasn't taking the bait. He goes, yeah, guys in the room hate to lose. But he did kind of hesitate when we asked him the question. So,
yeah, it's such a weird thing. And I know they want to play it down like it wasn't a big thing. But to your earlier point, if there was a message for Tkachuk to back down a little, that's not in his DNA. That's not good.
And if you look at his numbers since then.
No, he's been invisible until this weekend. Yeah. It's been his worst hockey he's played in ages.
I don't want to correlate it entirely on that because he had a couple goals in one game and he's had a couple assists before and after that. But, he's been quiet ever since the puck flip.
It's a whale of a coincidence if it is one, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's so I would love to find out who in that room said what. I never probably will, but when you got guys like when Elliot's intel is telling you that something was said, and my intel is telling you, and you know people close to this team are telling you that. I'm sorry, but I'm starting to buy into it, and that would pretty much answer most of the questions you'd have about this team. If someone's saying don't be quite as emotionally engaged, that player needs to be traded tomorrow.
Well, yeah, it's and I don't know that it's stretching to suggest something along those lines occurred. We'll see how it goes tonight. To your point earlier, no Muzzin means no chance for retribution, although we do have Jack Campbell, Matthew Tkachuk drama, if we recall. I just don't know if Jack will get in. We've got some news coming out of Toronto regarding starting lineups. We told you 5 minutes ago, no Muzzin. Hyman didn't skate this morning. Thornton appears to be out for tonight. That would be two top six forwards and a top four defenseman gone from Toronto. As for the Flames, it looks like Oliver Shillington will make his season debut on a pair with Yusuf Alamaki. It also looks like Sean Monahan's back after missing the last two games of a lower body issue against Edmonton. He's going to center a line, at least to start, with Gaudreau and Bennett. The 3M line reunited, kind of. Well, I shouldn't say it is. It's not at all. My bad here. It's Tkachuk, Lindholm, Mangiapane, one of the multiple top lines we've seen that's anchored by Lindholm and Tkachuk. Lucic, Backlund, Dubé, that line's had some success of late. And your fourth line will see Glenn Gauden remain in. Levo to his right, Nordstrom to his left, and Simone will not be in. It also means Nestrov's not in, and Jacob Markstrom appears to be starting in net tonight. Does that surprise you at all, Eric? Rittich has come off his best start in over a year, and Markstrom has looked like a guy that could use some rest, but they're going to go to him tonight. It is the first of 3 and 4, so if you're going to use him, one of those two that go back-to-back, Toronto, Ottawa, later in the week, you've got to use him tonight if you want to use him in two of the next three games.
Yeah, and you know, I've been saying this for a while, that it's absolutely one of the biggest issues of this organization, you know, the David Riddick situation. And I think it was a huge step in the right direction that, you know, Riddick played. I think he gained some confidence in that the game he played the other night. I know they lost, and he's lost 8 in a row now. But, you know, you need to get this guy's confidence up. He's fighting for his career. And if he can't get his act together, this team won't make the playoffs. He may not be the main reason why they don't make the playoffs, but if you can't get a backup who's going to win, you know, at least, you know, 40-50% of his starts, you're dead. You're absolutely dead in this league. So I don't blame him for starting Markstrom. I would have started Riddick tonight, but just to give a little more rest to Markstrom. But, hey, you're trying to turn your entire season around, so you got to go with all your big guns. I got no problem with starting Markstrom.
And I would think Markstrom tonight would mean Riddick on Wednesday, and then you would have the Flames against Ottawa Thursday, if I'm correct, with the game that would go back to Markstrom. So it does allow them two of the next three with Markstrom, but if there was ever a time to build a momentum, I would think it would be coming off that. I thought a really strong start for Riddick on Friday. I mean, you only allowed two on home ice. That should be enough to win, right?
Yeah, he played well. And he did it in at a time when he's really fighting it, I think, you know, mentally. I think he's really struggling, wondering if he's ever going to get back on track. He says not, but I beg to differ. With 8 losses in a row, it's got to be tough for him. So, yeah, this is going to be fascinating. I'll say it again. The Toronto series will be telling if these guys show up with some heart. Even if they lose, if they show up and play with heart, I think that's okay. But those games against Ottawa, that's your season right there. These two games against Toronto, that's not your season. But it's those 5 out of 6 against Ottawa. If you don't basically win 5 out of the 6, or at least get your mojo back, it's over. It's absolutely over. Because everybody else has seen Ottawa as the free spot on the bingo card. And I do think it's actually bad luck for the Calgary Flames that they don't play Ottawa till this late. Everybody else has already feasted on them while the Ottawa Senators are, you know, a young team trying to find their legs. You know, they're starting to show a little more proficiency, and that's right when the Calgary Flames get them. So maybe another just stroke of bad luck for the Flames, but we'll see how they handle it.
Quick thought on Oliver Shillington's season debut. I think he's a better player than how they've utilized him in the last year. He's hardly played, and they really like Connor Mackey, but gosh, is he green compared to Shillington, who I think we forget took a pretty regular shift a couple of years ago.
You mean Val Mackey? Is he being green, you mean?
No, I'm saying they started Mackey for 2 games instead of Shillington. Oh, yeah. And I feel like one guy that's exciting to get in, but the other guy I think is an NHLer that he's hardly played in a year. You think about they had Gustafson and forward at the deadline last year, didn't play in the playoffs. He hasn't played all year. He finally gets in tonight to Shillington. Thoughts on him?
I'm happy for him, and I think they need to know what they have in him, because when I look at the Seattle expansion draft, I look at the 3 players who at this point in time would be the most obvious guys, you know, to be plucked by Seattle. You know, he's the number one guy on defense. Him and Giordano are both going to be exposed. And also up front, of course, Sam Bennett, which to me is the obvious one that they'll take. And I do think he'll stick around for the entire year. As I've said a couple times on the broadcast, like I just think that that works best for the team if Bennett is still here all season long. So I really want to see what Shillington can do. He certainly feels like he's an NHLer. He's shown signs of it. He's got the speed and the skating to do it. But, you know, he's still prone to those mental breakdowns. And if he has a couple of those, you know, tonight or in his next couple starts, who could blame him? The guy hasn't played hockey in so long. So
February 23rd, 2020, nearly a full year. He's a day away from a year ago, his last game in the NHL. That's it for time, Eric. Pleasure as always. We'll do it again next week. It won't be boring as the Flames head into the center of the hockey universe on a 3-game losing skid. Thanks for your time.
Cheers, man.
All right. Eric Francis' show runs Monday mornings 9 till 10 right here on Sportsnet 960. The Fan is brought to you by our good friends at Horse Racing Alberta, the 7,000 men and women who work in the Alberta horse racing and breeding industry. Scott Rintoul show coming up. No shortage of storylines. The Canucks tie it late and lose. The Flames head in against a dynamic offense on a 3-game skid. That's tonight in the NHL. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.